Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Some of the world's oldest living organisms are in the immediate path of danger. The Washburn Fire burning within Yosemite National Park is threatening Mariposa Grove, home to giant sequoia trees believed to be some of the largest and oldest living things on the planet. As the fire enters its fourth day, the smoke has begun to impact air quality from the Tahoe Basin to the Bay Area. And the activity was reportedly so intense, it catapulted tree debris hundreds of feet into the air, nearly striking a firefighting aircraft. So, how is that possible? Part of the answer, according to Dr. Craig Clements, professor of meteorology and climate science at San Jose State, has to do with the weather inside and surrounding the fire. Craig leads the university's Fire Weather Research Laboratory, which is the only one of its kind in the country, and joins us about their ongoing research into extreme fire behavior and new research programs in Northern California launching this fire season. Professor Clements, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Starting off, when did the Fire Weather Research Lab at San Jose State begin, and what type of data do you gather?
Oh, well, we started in 2007 and kind of got bigger and bigger. And in 2020, we actually hired five tenure track faculty and started the Wildfire Interdisciplinary Research Center. The types of data that we collect are kind of unique in terms of meteorology and wildfire science. We actually go out to active wildfires with Doppler radar, Doppler LiDAR, which is like a radar but uses a laser beam. And we can collect winds, plume structures. We can look and peer inside these plumes, which is very important to understand the dynamics of how the fire is behaving and what the atmosphere is doing to drive that fire.
I mean, the timing of scaling up this weather research lab comes, you know, when California has experienced, you know, record wildfires, and you have over two decades of meteorological field observations. How does the approach to studying wildfires differ from other weather events in your field?
Well, it's difficult to study wildfire, actually, unlike other severe weather phenomena like thunderstorms and tornadoes and hurricanes, because we just don't have dedicated assets to study wildfire. And that's changing, which is great. So we basically take a storm chasing approach where we see a fire that's of interest scientifically, and we go out to it, and everybody's fire line qualified. Our team can be actually ordered as a national resource, so we can get called to a fire by incident command teams. We could collect the data as close as we can. And so we get some really exciting observations, which are used to not only understand the fire behavior, but also to better tune our prediction models, because these models don't have a lot of the data that are needed to make sure that they're on the right track.
Well, given that, what are some of the most notable fire weather events that you've observed in recent years?
Well, I guess probably some of these rotating columns or fire-generated tornadoes. That's something that's of everybody's interest, of course. Another few things are fire-induced winds and strong updrafts, as you mentioned earlier, of this tree branch being lofted by the plume. These are things that we don't have good observations of. And in 2016, we actually had the opportunity to fly an aircraft through a pyrocumulonimbus in Idaho on the Pioneer Fire, and we were able to measure updraft velocity. So these are strong winds that go vertically from the fire, as strong as 120 miles per hour. And so those are the type of winds that we can see, which can clearly loft branches and parts of trees and such. So it's not surprising that that was seen on the Washburn Fire the other day.
I mean, just visualizing what you're laying out, I can only imagine the durability of the equipment that you use, not to mention the risk that you all take when you head out there. I mean, you've called yourself like a storm chaser.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much risk. I mean, we're very careful. We're tied in with the incident command team. And so we basically stay close to the road, and we don't, you know, as long as we can get good observations. And the thing about what we're doing is we're launching weather balloons, and we're using radar and things that we can scan from a safe distance. And so it's exciting at times. Fire can get pretty close, but it's never a dire situation. But some of the aircraft observations are quite unique, and that's going farther this year. We're going to be flying our own imaging system on a NOAA aircraft over some wildfires in California. So that's going to be some new information and new data and testing some new camera systems.
Yeah, that is exciting. Let's get into the two fires in our region over the past week. The Electra fire, which began a week ago in Amador and Calaveras counties, is now 85% contained. But the Washburn fire in and around Yosemite has burned some 2,000 acres. I believe it's 0% containment as of this morning. Are these wildfires consistent with what we should be experiencing this early in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, we're in July. This is pretty typical. Again, these fires haven't grown dramatically over the course of the last few days, right? It's, you know, the Electra fire keeps topping out at about 4,000 acres. The Washburn fire now is, you know, it's obviously a total concern, and some of these reports of these updrafts is concerning. But generally, if you look at some of the smoke plumes and some of the structures, it's, you know, it's burning low intensity, but that could change because we are getting into a little bit drier conditions today and tomorrow, and it's going to be warmer. So as the temperature goes up, the fuel's dry, and that allows those fires to burn more intensely. So it could be problematic the next couple of days, but I would imagine they're going to get a good jump on it.
Okay, well, that's encouraging. In California, when it comes to acres burned so far this year, according to CAL FIRE, we're below last year and even the five-year average. But across the United States, it's kind of a 180. The National Interagency Fire Center reports the year-to-date acres burned is 220% above the 10-year average. So let's take a wider lens. Explain what's happening.
Well, the whole western U.S. is under a drought, so there's fires in other parts of the country. Those can burn a little bit more intensely. So like looking at New Mexico and some of the fires that we had there earlier this summer, you know, those are big acreage burns. And so that's adding to what we're seeing in the national amount of acres burned. So California, we're a little bit below right now, but, you know, we're just ramping into our core fire season. I consider August and September. And so, we've been kind of lucky, and part of that is because of the weather. It's been a little cooler in Northern California, and we had some late rain in the Sierra in June, and so that really helps dampen the fire danger, fire risk. And the next couple of days, actually, over Northern California, there's only a few areas that are above moderate fire risk or, like, very high. So we're still pretty lucky so far this month.
Yeah, I mean, there's been kind of a weather whiplash in the last month or so, at least where we are here in Sacramento, because June was one of the hottest Junes on record for the Sacramento Valley. I mean, we had 11 days of 100-plus degree weather, 8 days in the 90s. But then the region also experienced that kind of, like, 180 cooler than normal temperatures just earlier this month. How does that impact firefighting, given the Electra fire ignited on July 4th and is now 85% contained?
Well, the cooler the temperatures, the better it is, because you get better recovery of humidity. So the humidity can go up at night. And so the fires can, like, kind of dampen down at night typically. But we've been seeing over the last few years that nighttime fire behavior during the nighttime hours is increased. And so when we get these cooler, we get a cold front that moves through the region, brings colder air, and that can actually dampen fire behavior, particularly because it's just cooler and the fuel moisture, the moisture content in the plants actually isn't as low as it would be if it was really, really hot. Like when we had the heat wave in 2020 and we had the lightning outbreak, we had lots of large fires real quickly. And so this year, I think we've been pretty lucky.
Given that we're in our third year of drought-like conditions, how does that further compound the circumstances that we're dealing with and the conditions that we're in?
Well, the drought really affects our fires because what happens is those fuels are stressed, so plants, the shrubs, and they are more easily ignitable the drier they are. So if they're stressed because of drought over multiple years, we have a lot of mortality in the plants. So we have more dead plants, and so the dead plants or dead fuels will burn easier than the live plants. And even our live fuel moisture is something that we sample regularly in the Bay Area, and we look about that live fuel moisture. So how that works is teams go out into the field, but they clip shrubs of different species, and they take it back to the lab, and then we look at how much water content's in those plants. And we monitor this every 2 weeks. And so right now we're just about below average. We're not at our minimum, so that's good. but we're between average and below average. So we're a little drier than we should be. And that's kind of remarkable, being that we're in this drought. I figured it was going to be a little bit worse. So, yeah, so that's how, so as the fuel moisture, as we go through the summer and we get into our fall, the live fuel moisture of those plants will be at the minimum. And that's the same time we have our minimum in fuel moisture content is when we have our most frequent period of Santa Ana winds and Northern California north winds and Diablo winds. So when we get those big wind events, that's when our fuel moistures are the lowest. That's why we have a lot of big fires in September and October.
Right. You know, your research center is doing research that previously hasn't been done. And really the goal is to promote sharing of information and the data that you're collecting from the University at San Jose State to industry. How does your research help both state and federal firefighting combat wildfires?
Well, yeah, we have a unique center set up. We're a National Science Foundation, industry, university cooperative research center. So we have industry partners, the utilities, insurance companies, federal agencies, and some startups that actually are partnering in the center, and they help drive the research so it helps their industry. One of the things that we're doing is we're building, we have a state of the science model that is operational, and this model is what we call a coupled fire atmosphere model, and it allows us to look at how fires create their own weather. If we don't couple fire models with the atmospheric model, like a weather model, then we can't really predict how they're going to create big plumes, you know, big clouds, and the extreme fire behavior on the ground. And so this modeling system, which is state of the science, is operational, meaning we are running it as a weather model operationally when a fire breaks out. And last summer, we ran it for Dixie Fire, we ran it for the Caldor Fire, and we were getting requests from Forest Service, Cal Fire, to run certain fires. And so we're ramping that up right now, and we're getting more computing resources. And just a shout out to Assemblymember Osh Carla for securing funding for the center. So we're going to be able to quadruple our computing power this next year and be able to do more simulations. And that'll be for the state of California. So we're really excited about that.
Well, given that the Dixie and the Caldor fires were the first wildfires known in state history to crest over the Sierra, and the Dixie fire approached like 1 million acres, what did you learn from both of those wildfires last year?
Well, it was kind of interesting. We're still doing the analysis from some of the simulations and some of the data that we collected, but you know, the drier the fuels at those higher elevations because of the lower snowpack from the drought, that causes higher elevation fuel moistures to be lower. So the fire was able to spread to higher altitudes in the Sierra. So that's something that was, you know, a lot of people talked about that and noticed that. We also observed the fire burning up and over the Sierra crest with our radar and saw some rotating vortices or circulations within the fire plume that burned down to Highway 395. So that's something that I'm working on with a colleague at the University of Nevada, Reno, analyzing. And so there's some really exciting dynamics that occurred because those fires burned so intensely last year.
Yeah. How has our understanding of the dynamics of how wildfires create their own weather and the role that it has on fire behavior, how has that changed since you and your team began your research?
Well, Al, yeah. So, more people are analyzing Pyrocumulo Nimbus, so these big fire clouds, the thunderstorms that are driven off the wildfires. The modeling community, so the prediction systems are getting better. They're taking into account these types of interactions between the fire and the atmosphere. And the data that we've been collecting has actually proven to be very useful. And so it's becoming more regular for us to get out and use radar. So people were not using radar on wildfires as much as they should have been. And now it's quite common in the community. So we're actually using more meteorological tools to study fire behavior. And we're actually using getting more measurements on wildfires. So launching weather balloons on wildfires. The National Incident Meteorologist Program adopted radio SONs, which are weather balloons, okay? And they launch those at wildfires to get the atmospheric conditions around the incident. And so that's kind of new. And all these observations are getting better and better, and it's allowing us to learn more about the fire environment. Mm.
Finally, Professor Clements, you know, we're in another wildfire season in 2 years. How should we be viewing the coming months ahead?
Well, I would think that Californians should be expecting a higher than normal fire activity, which, you know, obviously if you compare the last 2 years, what's normal? But we should expect smoky skies throughout the summer once we get if we get a big fire going. And there's a chance that we could have a number of large fires burning around the state. And again, it's up to having ignitions. If we don't have ignitions, we won't have the fire. So everybody has to be careful if they're out in the forests and playing, because it's, you know, 9 out of 10 fires are human caused. So
literally 9 out of 10. I think it's 90% exactly.
Yeah.
Craig Clements is a professor of meteorology and climate science, director of the Wildfire Interdisciplinary Research Center at San Jose State. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Up next, we will have a discussion with three women changing the mindset that fire is the enemy, now leading and fostering a long overdue relationship with prescribed burns. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.